How will voice technology change consumer behavior? How do consumers use the technology when they're first introduced to it? And how does that behavior develop? JWT and Mindshare employed a range of research techniques across 9 countries to explore the impact of voice technology in an award-winning study they called Speakeasy. Here, the study's authors, Marie Stafford, Director of Consumer Intelligence, Trends and Insight at JWT, and Jeremy Pounder, Futures Director at Mindshare, discussed with Brian Jacobs some of the most significant findings.
Okay, so hello everybody, this is Brian Jacobs, and today for this episode of this ASI cast, we're joined by Marie Stafford, who's European Director at the Innovation Group at J. Walter Thompson, and Jeremy Pounder, who's Futures Director at Mindshare in the UK, and they're going to join us to talk about a very innovative piece of work that they conducted last year, it would be now, called Speakeasy, which is all around measuring the effect, impact, and consequences of voice technology, which obviously includes things like virtual assistants, you know, things like Alexa, Siri from Apple, Cortana from Microsoft, and so on, and indeed various other ways in which people are using voice technology these days. Now, guys, you at the start of your report, you say that this is about measuring the impact of voice technology on consumer behavior, and you say that voice technology is sweeping the world. And to that end, you measured, or you conducted through your research, a study across 9 countries, UK, USA, Germany, Spain, Thailand, Japan, Singapore, Australia, and China, using a whole variety of techniques, ranging from neuroscience through qualitative research, expert interviews, desk research, and indeed some consumer quant research as well. So this is a very extensive extensive piece of work. And in it, one of your conclusions is you sort of paint a future within which consumers are going to, or if they're not already, but they're activating computers and related hardware by their voices. Now, given that... no doubt we're doing this all the time, being at the cutting edge of technology, as it were. But given that the average person is still at a relatively early stage of using this kind of technology, what are you finding are the sort of first use cases? How are people using this technology now?
Yeah, so I think what we found is that in most markets where voice is a nascent technology, the use cases are initially, you know, very functional. So lots of people using for search, so using voice search via their phone or through voice speakers, asking questions, maybe, you know, getting specific information about products or retailers, about brands, and then quite, you know, kind of very lifestyle oriented use cases. So asking for direct actions, playing music, really simple things, and yet, you know, that lend themselves really beautifully to the voice space, like setting alarms. Like if you imagine a person that's in their kitchen and cooking and trying to multitask, there's something, you know, really quite valuable about the ability to set an alarm just using your voice rather than having to go wash your hands, dry them, and, you know, pick up your device. So so lots of kind of very practical use cases. Getting the news, I think, was something that people love to get, you know, with Alexa, you can ask for flash briefings, and it's really quite popular when people are sort of getting up in the morning, getting ready for work, to ask for the news to be read out to them. And then through to, you know, perhaps the people who are a bit more technologically minded, quite excited about using it to control other parts of their home. So you can sync it up with the lighting, for example, and just, you know, ask for your lights to be switched on or off, to connect up with alarms, security, things like that in your home.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also probably a useful distinction to draw between people using voice on the mobile, which is predominantly for search, and often out of the home. So often uses are about, you know, finding information, where's the nearest or where can I find something close to me at this time, drawing a distinction between that and then the use of the smart speaker, which is, well, almost by definition in the home. And I think at the moment, at least, tends to be quite task focused. Marie said, you know, things like setting alarms, playing music, of course, I mean, is a huge use of smart speakers. So,
and do you think, I mean, what do you think are the major barriers that will have to be overcome here? I mean, the obvious one, I suppose, is some sense of embarrassment of people talking to a machine or being seen to talk to something passive or something that's a piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Do you think is that a major barrier? And do you think that's simply a sort of generational? I mean, I would be embarrassed, but then, you know.
it's interesting. I mean, it's something that we did pick up on in the research. Like, there's definitely a preference at this time for using it in private spaces. You know, people feel a lot more comfortable in their home, in their car, where it is completely private, or they're with members of their family, let's say. You know, the differences between countries in terms of who was prepared to use this sort of, you know, walking down the street talking out loud are quite dramatic. And I think a lot of that is down to cultural mores. So, you know, somewhere like Japan, it was complete anathema, the idea of, you know, shouting out your business in the street, whereas other countries were less concerned. So I think there's definitely a cultural dimension. But also, I think, you know, it's quite interesting if you sort of think back historically. I mean, one of the things that we looked at was when the telephone was first a technology sort of 100 years ago. And actually the same objections came up then. You know, people were like, oh, you know, there's no way people are going to talk down the phone and you know, speak openly in front of other people. And of course, you know, over time that just kind of fades away. And I think, you know, our feeling is that this is probably an initial barrier that over time will just be, you know, it will normalize and people will become a lot more comfortable with that side of things. There's also innovation sort of trying to tackle that as well. You know, you've got some of the in-ear devices which can give you, you know, a kind of semi-private experience. So you're the only person hearing what you're saying to your voice assistant, as well as I think that there's also work being done on developing technology that can hear sort of your voice at a lower volume. So so I think, you know, things will change in that space. But there's definitely other barriers that we came up with.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting ones, which we discovered to some degree, but maybe not to the extent that we thought, was around the whole issue of privacy, and particularly with smart speakers, the idea of Google or Amazon essentially having a listening device in the home. I mean, to a certain degree, it's self-selecting. So, you know, if you're going to be prepared to have one, then almost by definition, you don't really find that too much of a problem. But, it, you know, in the wider population, there, you know, as I guess we see with other issues around data privacy, there's often a surprisingly small number of people who are sufficiently motivated to object to using a technology solely on the basis of that.
What about accuracy? I mean, is accuracy a barrier? Do people sort of think, oh, I'm going to ask for something and it's going to tell me something completely different or do something entirely, you know, entirely different from what I've asked for, and that's going to lead to some sense of inconvenience or embarrassment or whatever. I mean, do people worry about that? Or indeed, is it even an issue? I mean, is it, you know, I would think it would be a matter of concern, accuracy, but maybe these things are now so accurate that it simply isn't a problem any longer.
I think it is still an issue to some degree, but it may be more a case of buyer's remorse than about putting people off in the first place. I think the other thing to say is that even if some of the sophistication in terms of the interaction isn't necessarily there, I think people still derive a lot of value from, say, the smart speakers, even if they're only using it for comparatively limited applications. I mean, if you think, you know, the Echo Dot is about 35 quid, even the, you know, the full Echo is sort of around the 100 mark.
Yeah.
For a pretty strong audio experience that you can control all your music through Spotify, let's say, or through, you know, listening to the radio, that's almost enough value in itself, I think, for some people.
I think, I mean, one of the obviously the sort of major issue for both for this audience and I suppose for anybody involved in our business is what are the sort of commercial implications of this for brands? And I must admit, this is a really interesting topic that I don't have any answers to, and I wondered if you'd sort of come up with stuff as you've been immersing yourselves in this technology. I mean, obviously, brands have been built over time very largely on sort of visual clues, of whatever they may be it a color or a logo or whatever it is. And obviously, what's going to happen now is that brands are going to start responding, presumably, through voice, or are going to be somehow or other communicating via voice. Mm. How do you think, I mean, how should a brand go about finding its voice?
Mm. Well, I think, you know, you make a really excellent point that this is kind of transforming the way that brands can engage with consumers. You know, for the first time, this is providing an opportunity to actually have a meaningful conversation. So I think in that respect, this is a really exciting channel for brands. And what we found is that users are really open to that. Almost two-thirds of the people we spoke to in our global panel said they'd like to be able to communicate with brands through voice. So I think it's a huge opportunity. But in terms of, you know, how brands go about it, the first thing really, I think, is just to think really carefully about how this channel can enhance the consumer journey, you know, rather than just thinking, okay, let's translate, you know, everything we're doing already in other channels, let's replicate that in voice. You know, this is not about using this technology for its own sake. There are clearly moments in the customer journey where it can add value. And I think, you know, the first thing to do is really identify where those are, you know, where you can play a role that can be of value to the end user. And then, you know, once that's been established, then it's kind of really where the creativity comes in, because one of our key findings was that once people start using voice, they actually expect brands to have their own unique voices and personalities. So just under 75% people globally said they expect that. So there's a real kind of onus on brands to kind of spend a lot of time kind of thinking really carefully about how the brand might sound.
Yeah, I mean, I think many of the principles that brands have used to think about things like, you know, voiceovers in TV commercials or other ways in which the brand is manifested in a sort of qualitative sense, I think some of those principles no doubt will still apply here. I mean, certainly what we saw in our research, the neuroscience component of our research, was that when people carry out a task where they're essentially talking direct to a brand or mentioning the brand by name through voice, we saw roughly double the level of emotional response compared to when they carried out the same task via text. So the way we interpreted that is that when you speak to a brand, when you say the name of a brand, a lot of the deep-lying associations and emotions and feelings that you've built up over many years in relation to that brand are triggered to a greater degree by saying the brand name, by essentially talking to the brand, than by typing it out or tapping on a logo on a screen. Mm. So I think there's some interesting, you know, I suppose fundamental principles about, you know, what voice could potentially offer to brands in terms of reinforcing some of these long-standing associations.
It's very interesting to consider. I mean, if you're obviously, if J. Walter Thompson, I mean, how, you know, you can imagine how you can, you know, over time we become quite adept at seeing how, I don't know, typefaces could influence how people perceive a brand, how colors can perceive how people see a brand, and how different colors and uses of colors can affect people's perception of a brand. And so obviously there's a great deal of sort of experience and history in how you actually go about researching that and indeed creating for that. Mm. I mean, apart from making pretty obvious jokes about accents and all the rest of it, I mean, how does one go about sort of going, well, what does Coke sound like? Mm. I mean, does Coke sound American? Or does Coke sound, I mean, what does Coke, is it male or female? I mean, what does Coke sound like if it's going to speak to you? How does one go about actually, you know, understanding how you, you know, because you can get that obviously horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But how does one start? I mean, it seems to me a really, really interesting creative issue.
For sure. And I think, you know, it's something that is going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of experimentation, trial and error over the coming years with this, because what we found as particularly interesting is, you know, you might want to talk to consumers about that, you know, so we actually did that as part of our research. We gave them a selection of brands and asked them, how do you think, you know, let's say Chanel or I don't know, Mercedes, how should these brands sound? And what's interesting is that people don't agree. You know, they don't necessarily agree on gender, on tone, on kind of, you know, personality. So it's a real conundrum. And I think, you know, obviously a lot will be guided by, you know, brands' kind of values and how they've defined and created the brands visually and tonally. Up to now, most brands will already have a tone of voice, but you know how you express that creatively and literally through an actual voice is probably going to be an area of a lot of, you know, experimental creativity over the years, I'd say.
Yeah, it is really interesting, isn't it? Because it is a completely different channel, if you like, of communication. Mm. I mean, to that end, I mean, Jeremy, I mean, how do you imagine this channel is going to be measured, and you know, in any shape or form, as it were? I mean, is it sort of radio writ large in some way? Are we going to be measuring how people are using these kinds of assistants, voice assistants, and other types of voice technology? We're going to measure it almost as if it was a radio medium, or are we, you know, how are we going to go about doing it? Do you imagine some kind of automated way of measuring audience, or
I think it's going to be quite varied, to be honest, because the way in which voice technology can be applied is pretty varied in terms of what you might want to do with it. So I think if you're thinking about, say, the smart speaker environment, one aspect of what you might want to do there is essentially about engaging someone with your brand, and having, you might want to be trying to change people's perceptions of the brand and reinforce the, you know, certain positive aspects of it, in which case, I guess the way you would measure it is similar to other forms of content that you might create and achieve the same kind of purpose. So it's about how would you shift brand perceptions. That's one potential use of a skill, say, in the Alexa environment. But equally, you could create a skill for a brand which is essentially an extension of your customer service channel. So, you know, Capital One, for example, in the finance sector, create a skill for their existing cardholders to carry out queries around, you know, their credit card balance, or carry out other basic tasks that otherwise would be done through the website or through through a call center. So, you know, in that situation, you would probably want to measure it in a similar way to how you measure the investment in other channels. So I think it's difficult to say there's one single answer. And it really is about, I suppose, applying the principles of how you measure any marketing activity and just being rigorous about what are you actually doing it for, what's the objective, and then working out the appropriate way to measure it.
I think one of the things we said in the report that's quite key, you know, I think what we believe brands should do is really just start experimenting. You know, the ways to measure this, I think, will come through time. You know, these are really early days, but I think what's more important is really just getting to know the environment, trying to work out what works, and just experimenting, because people's expectations will go really, really quickly. And, you know, what feels like something quite novel now, you know, will very, very rapidly become an expectation, and not being present will probably be seen as kind of a black mark very shortly.
And do you think, I mean, this is obviously a very, very, very major development indeed in the history of communication, really, because we're now moving into something where people are controlling a device through their voice. And so this is obviously a completely a new, and you can imagine loads and loads of directions in which this could sort of spin off. Are you planning on tracking how this is going? I mean, do you imagine doing this work? I mean, this is obviously a huge piece of work you've done, the speakeasy work, but do you imagine tracking it in some way, or do you imagine follow-up studies, or how are you going to sort of carry on keeping on top of this?
Yeah, I mean potentially we're sort of looking at each other here going, we haven't actually discussed that. So, but yeah, I mean, potentially. And I think, you know, it's certainly the study has received an enormous amount of interest, and we're getting, you know, such great traction with it that, you know, potentially further down the line, it would be great to revisit and see how things have moved on. I mean, in terms of just keeping up to speed with what's happening in this space, it's incredibly difficult to keep up, because the developments are coming thick and fast, you know, almost every day. You know, we find we're presenting together at different events and, you know, just monitoring the kind of emergence of new platforms, new devices, but new services. It's incredibly dynamic space. And so, I think we'll certainly be keeping track of it. Whether we publish another study, we'll have to discuss that behind the scenes, I'd say, Jeremy.
Indeed. Watch your space.
Yeah, but I think it's, my point is that this is a lot more than, somebody using TV in a certain way, or somebody doing something, you know, a little bit different on an online vehicle or something. I mean, we're now talking about a completely different way in which people communicate with devices and get information back from devices.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting to think about how voice will complement other, you know, modes of interaction as well. You know, we when we looked at it last year, we kind of focused it on almost in isolation, really. But I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting how this works with other technologies. You know, think about how fundamental voice will be for something like virtual reality or augmented reality. You know, I think that's going to be a really interesting area to track as well.
Yeah, I think one of the big unknowns will be the extent to which people use it for shopping, particularly around grocery. Now, clearly, Amazon's main reason, or one of the main reasons certainly, is to try and make shopping a more seamless, frictionless experience and give people another easy channel to buy stuff through them, and, you know, potentially they may well move more aggressively into the grocery sector, and then what happens with FMCG brands, who obviously have built up their success over many years through essentially facings in a supermarket aisle, how they adapt to a world where there isn't really a visual presence when people buy their, you know, everyday groceries, and, you know, the challenges they would face in that environment. I think that's a really interesting area that we'll certainly be looking at very closely over the coming years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, it's been really fascinating. I mean, congratulations first on the work. I mean, it's a really fascinating study, and I've not seen anything sort of quite like it anywhere else. And it's both not only in terms of its sort of geographic spread, but also the different techniques that you used and the depth you went into on the whole thing. I mean, it's a really really landmark piece of work, I think. And thanks very much indeed for joining us on this podcast and for talking about it.
Absolute pleasure. If we can do a small plug, the report is available to download for all your listeners from both the Mindshare and the JWT websites. So if people want more, they can.
Expect a flood. Or whatever it is you get with the download.
Indeed.
Okay, right, thanks a lot.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Cheers.